What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
I'm John Batchelor. The meeting between the President of the United States and the General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, turned on a number of stories that were not finished. That is, there's a confrontation between the U.S. and China. What is to be done? Or the U.S. is visiting sanctions or tariffs, high tariffs on China. What is to be done? Or the threats to Taiwan repeated by the Chinese Communist Party and looked with alarm in Washington. What is to be done? None of those issues, to my knowledge, were resolved at the meeting. But there was one story that emerged as a surprise. Fentanyl, the drug that is damaging the lives of hundreds of thousands of people and their families across America, has to do with who makes the fentanyl, who ships it, who transfers it into the U.S., who's profiting by it. Joseph Sternberg is a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's based in London. Once upon a time, he was based in Hong Kong, so he knows East Asia very well. Joe, a very good evening to you. The summit, the bilaterals discussion at the APEC meeting between the two, did not resolve any of the big stories. There was attention to fentanyl, and I read from your newest column that the Chinese authorities have made promises before about fentanyl. So let's establish, what is it that China contributes to the tent of the fentanyl poison? Where does it come from? And what does the Chinese Communist Party have to do with it? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, so to start with that, you start with what fentanyl is. And it is a synthetic opioid. So it doesn't come from a plant, as traditional opium would come from poppy seeds, or as other drugs might come from, plants that are grown. It comes from a combination of chemicals. And so the problem for quite a while now, this issue goes back three presidential administrations in the U.S. at least, is that China is home to a large pharmaceutical industry, and it's also home to a large chemical industry. So that means that there are a lot of very small companies or outfits in China that are either capable of manufacturing the fentanyl themselves or who produce the chemicals that are used to make fentanyl called precursors, which then are sold in an uncontrolled fashion. Because oftentimes, if you have a situation where various chemicals can be used to manufacture drugs, the sale of those chemicals might be controlled as well. I mean, listeners encounter this every time you try to buy Sudafed at the CVS or the Walgreens, and you have to show your ID. That's because over-the-counter Sudafed contains chemicals that can be used to produce methamphetamines. Well, here Chinese companies will sell in a very unrestricted fashion a lot of the chemical precursors that are used for fentanyl production, and that has created a plague in America that is claiming hundreds of thousands of lives and leaving many hundreds of thousands of people addicted to the drug. And there have been many attempts over the years to try to encourage Beijing to crack down on this. I think most recently, in 2019, the Trump administration secured Beijing's agreement to finally put some of these chemicals and fentanyl itself on a schedule of drugs that would not be allowed to be sold in an unrestricted fashion. That has had some success, but very limited success. And so the agreement between President Xi Jinping and President Biden last week was supposed to tighten up those rules even more, but there isn't really a lot of evidence that it's going to be any more successful than the previous efforts have been.
The fentanyl precursor, it's called, from China travels to North America. travels to Mexico, I've read, because part of the conversations involved AMLO, the president of Mexico, speaking with Xi Jinping, and AMLO, the president of Mexico, speaking with President Biden. So Mexico is a component here. The Chinese cartels, gangs, chemistry labs shipped to Mexico. It's repackaged or reignited and shipped into the United States. So there's a triangle here. And has Xi Jinping power over any part of that triangle, or more power than any other part?
Well, I think that there is going to be an issue that we will see if any kind of crackdown on the shipment of some of these precursors out of China makes any difference. It might, to the extent that the activity that is coming out of China has been happening by legitimate businesses. I mean, remember that one of the big problems here is that a lot of this can be legitimate pharmaceutical or chemical companies that have a criminal part to them, trafficking in fentanyl and the chemicals that are used to produce it. So, one of the issues with getting China to try to crack down on this historically has been that they were unwilling to risk cracking down on the legitimate part of their pharma or chemical industries for the sake of cracking down on the illegitimate aspects of some of these businesses. So from that perspective, it'll be challenging for the Chinese. But I mean, the other thing that you've lit on there, John, is that the supply chains for these drugs are so complicated. And it isn't just a matter that the chemicals are manufactured into the fentanyl in China and then shipped to the U.S., although that happens sometimes and has happened in the past. It is just as likely that a bunch of different Chinese suppliers will ship a different bunch of chemicals to a place in Mexico, and a cartel in Mexico will produce the drug and then smuggle it into the U.S. Or Mexico will serve as a way station for some of the precursors that will be shipped into the U.S., and then the drug will be manufactured there. Keep in mind also, we're talking about the flow of drugs and chemicals into the U.S., but there's also the flow of money out, which is the other complicated part of this that China is involved in, because there have been some court cases in the U.S. prosecutions that have suggested that some Chinese banks, including state-owned Chinese banks, might be involved in some of the money laundering that happens after these drug deals. Presumably, Xi Jinping would want to crack down on that because he wouldn't be keen on Chinese banks doing this behavior that he doesn't have any insight into. But it's not always clear that the banks know that they're being used in this way. So, there's this assumption that Beijing always knows everything that is happening in the command and control Chinese economy. The drug trade is exposing the extent to which that isn't actually true.
Heretofore, I've said incorrectly, now I learn, that nothing goes on in a surveillance state that is not known to the Chinese Communist Party. There is the implication or the statement in your column that the gangs are outside the reach of law enforcement or outside the reach of the Central Committee. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, the problem that you run into here is actually the same as the problems that plague the Chinese economy writ large. So one of them is this weird form of decentralization and also very poor incentive, so that some industries are very highly centralized and controlled from the center. But oftentimes Beijing relies on these complicated networks, almost like a federalist system that we'd be familiar with in the U.S., in order to communicate its demands. And that communication doesn't always happen smoothly. You have a corruption problem. There's a lot of suggestion from experts who follow this issue very closely that oftentimes one of the reasons that enforcement of existing laws against drug trafficking in China is so weak is because a lot of the enterprises might be involved in forms of corruption with local government or local Communist Party officials in various areas that Beijing might eventually want to crack down on for Xi Jinping's own reasons, but creates a real political and economic challenge for Beijing to try to control this. And then you have the problem that because China is a hybrid between a centrally planned and a market economy, a lot of people are very good at figuring out how to skirt the rules. And so you end up, I think, with a lot of that form of activity as well.
You note that Mr. Xi's enthusiasm, as you put it, comes and goes over the now 10 plus years he's been in authority. Does it suit him that he doesn't control fentanyl, or to the extent that he can't shut it down, because it's aimed at the United States, his adversary? Is that on purpose?
Well, I suspect that there's a certain amount of making a virtue out of necessity here, which is that Beijing would find it very difficult for, as a practical matter, to try to shut down some of this trade. And so they're perfectly happy to redirect that trade to the U.S., where it can undermine the U.S. communities and our economy instead of China's. I mean, I'm sure that the approach to this issue would be very difficult if large numbers of unemployed Chinese youths were consuming fentanyl, which may start to happen. We don't know. And that would really shake things up quite a lot for Beijing, should that kind of ill befall China's society. But I do think that you can make an argument that if everything else was equal, Xi Jinping probably would prefer that this trade not be happening, because the money that it brings in enables the kind of corruption that undermines central control of the party and government apparatus, and also creates local officials who get too big for their breeches in a way. So I think that there's always concern in Beijing about the corruption. I think that there is probably unhappiness in Beijing over the fact that there's all of this economic activity that they don't know is happening. They can't be very enthusiastic about the way that Chinese banks are starting to get dragged into some of the money laundering and the financing, and would probably be very unhappy about that activity going on. But again, it raises the question, if they are unhappy about it, why don't they do something about it? And it's because the hybrid nature of the Chinese economy actually can make it very difficult for Beijing sometimes to enact the kind of change that they want to do.
There's also another meeting at the APEC meeting that may reveal where we're going with this. The headline, this is out of Mexico News Daily: AMLO and Chinese President Xi talk fentanyl at their first in-person meeting. That means that China knows that Mexico is used as a sovereign cartel. And what can they do about it? I mean, there's also the matter of supply chain. They could be talking supply chain for anything besides fentanyl. Is this promising, or just more of the winking at us? Sure, we'll take care of it, and then back to business as usual.
Well, I mean, this is a huge problem for Mexico, too, because as destabilizing as the opioid epidemic has been socially and in terms of criminal activity in the U.S., it is an order of magnitude worse in Mexico. And it's kind of hard to believe that Mexico would be a target of any kind of Chinese effort to use the drug trade to undermine foreign societies. But it would probably be in China's best interest if Xi Jinping could actually promise AMLO that China was going to end this trade once and for all. But I think that the bigger point is that when foreign governments go to Xi Jinping and do these grand bargains over the fentanyl trade, they are asking for something that Xi Jinping can't necessarily give them. So if you're doing a bargain where you are trading something, some favor that we might have given the Chinese in exchange for this agreement, that's a bad deal for us, because we have just given the Chinese something that we will deliver in exchange for something that Xi Jinping will not be able to deliver because of the distorted nature of the Chinese economy. And so I think that it probably would have been better for everyone to discuss the drug issue a bit less last week's summit, because it's not clear how productive those discussions can be, and focus on things Xi Jinping can do, like trying to ratchet down military tensions in the South China Sea.
And is it correct to say they avoided all of that heavy lifting entirely? Didn't even bring it up? Do we know?
Well, we know that there was an agreement in terms of restarting military-to-military communication between the U.S. and China, which is going to be helpful in avoiding accidents, because part of China's military strategy now in the South China Sea is to harass U.S. military, you know, naval vessels and planes that are conducting freedom of navigation exercises in the area. So, yeah, it's great that we now are going to have this phone line. But remember that this has only brought us back to the baseline that we had with the Soviets throughout the Cold War. I mean, this is not a significant earth-shattering innovation here. And so, again, I think that we should not give the Chinese too much credit for being something, you know, willing to do something that even the Soviets were prepared to do.
Joseph Sternberg is a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's in London. He writes political economics column. And we're going to stay in London. Life in London, influenced by political decisions made by the Tories, in particular, what the British press calls sacking. That's what we call firing. Sacking of the Home Secretary, Suella Braverman. Why? Who is she? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.